Welcome to the 2016 January 18th meeting of the Washington State Fish and Wildlife Commission. We're going to start off on Thursday. The agenda is a commission workshop and then two other items for the day. And this workshop is going to be following what's on page one of your agenda. We have several outstanding areas. We're still waiting for two other colleagues that are en route. So before we get into any of the heavy lifting or more heavy things to lift, we'll wait for them to come. But I'm going to open it up by handing it off to Bill. You had some things that you wanted to raise.
Thank you, Chair. This is Bill Freymeyer from the Attorney General's Office. I just wanted to suggest an addition to your workshop list. And it relate, if I could describe it briefly to tell you what I'm thinking about. There are two statutes in the APA that allow citizens in different circumstances to petition the commission to do something. One you see often is the petition for rulemaking. There's another one in a different statute that you're going to be addressing on your February 2nd call, which is this petition from Mr. Tim Hamilton of Twin Harbors and Mr. Menchacha of the Transparency Group. They both have gone together and requested that you your North of Falcon policy to a rule. And there's a statute in the APA that says agencies should adopt policies, and one section of it says you can convert them to rules, and so they've and people can petition you to do that. So there are these two statutes that allow people to request to petition you to convert something to a rule, or to create a rule, or to amend a rule, or to repeal a rule. And you've seen a number of them. My desire is to work with you, the commission, and the staff if necessary, but to help the commission make better decisions in those petition decisions. Each of those petition decisions, if you're going to enact what they want, initiate rulemaking, it's simple. You can just say that, and we know that path. In the case you want to deny it, both of the statutes require that you give some specific reasons why. And I think I'd like to help you in at the time whoever makes the motion, giving a little more rich explanation of why you want to move what you want to move. Often I think, you know, you've been given the what used to be called the green sheet, and it has some motion language, and I think sometimes you resort to reading that. And I think that we could just do a better job of engaging you, the commission, in explaining why you're deciding what you're deciding. So it's not the staff work that I see is an issue. It's you explaining sort of why in a little more detail who's ever moving, why they're moving, what they're moving. And if there's other people who share that view, you know, add a little color. So it's building the record, because if any of these were ever to be challenged, you know, we'd want to know why you decided what you decided. So it's really that motion language. So it's something I'd like to work on with you. And whether it's we sort of identify a motion maker ahead of time when we have one of these coming, or we work with all of you at the last minute, there's a couple different ways to do it. But it was something that, particularly at the last conference call meeting, I thought, you know, we could talk to you about improving that process.
Gotcha. Good question. Would it be better to make a clean motion and have it seconded, and then bring up these reasonings behind that motion in discussion? Because otherwise, I fear you'll have a motion, and whoever made the motion give their reasoning, and then somebody else pitch in, and do we get kind of outside of the proper process? Or do you want it to be a part of the motion? Because that discussion could carry on a little bit. And if that's all part of a motion, it gets to be pretty unwieldy. Or would it be sufficient to do it in discussion before it's voted on, after it's made as a motion and then seconded?
I don't know whether, let me give you a little bit of sense. To me, a good way that you might do it is, I move the following for these reasons. And then if somebody seconds, they're seconding it, you know, sort of for that package of principles, of reasons. If you don't get a second, someone else may make a motion, you know, I move for these reasons, and the second may relate to that. And then if there's discussion, that's, you know, great. But the other way may work just fine. It's really just building in some color around, you know, the true action. So I don't know if how they did things at boards you've had some, or maybe others of you have done it, but just thought we might improve your process a little bit.
Any other comments? Yeah.
Thank you, Brad. So your question is how to go with the Pacific Fishery Management Council, and it's kind of along the lines described there. So the motion would say we would want to deny the petition for the following, and then a list of very short reasons. Second, will you speak to your motion? Let me elaborate on those three. And if there is a letter that's going to go out, then the staff would put all of that discussion in it. I think maybe what I hear you saying is what you really don't like is, I move to deny the petition, period. And then that's it. And then you don't have something that's satisfactory. So if the maker of the motion is succinct enough and just hits topics and then goes into the rationale, I mean, that's what we were used to doing. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, any of that's fine. It's just more details about why you're doing what you're doing.
Does the staff send a letter out to the petitioner every time there's a petition before us that is acted upon?
Your executive assistant does.
Yeah, okay.
But she works with the staff and often with the attorney to capture what, you know, we heard from you as your decision. But it's just something that I'm happy to talk more about. I'm happy to think of some options, or we can just try it, and I can remind you as we get close to one. We'll have one for you on the February 2nd conference call, and I can talk with one of you ahead of time if there's any questions. But I think the summary sheet will give you lots of information. So,
my question, Bill, was I understand the need for detailed
description within the motion whether we're going to accept or deny the petition. Does the discussion that follows, is that part of the record too? Would that be included? All right.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So I like the idea of you coming up with a couple, you know, templates that you suggested that we can go through.
Okay.
One more question, Brad. Thanks. This is kind of a new guy question, but on the matter of petitions, and this is genuinely a new guy question here. So I've heard somewhere that we have to act on petitions within X amount of days, and that's why they're on conference calls. And so a question, is that true or false? And if it seems in my short experience that accepting a petition would be, you know, have a kind of a tall sand hill to climb. And if it's true that there's a pattern of rejecting and rarely accepting, is there any way out of not having to do these things on conference calls? I mean, is there enough time you could package 6 months worth of them all together at one time and deal with them then, or something like that?
Thank you. Both of the statutes, the one that you use most often is RCW 34.05.330. This is the one where people petition you to adopt a rule, amend a rule, or change a rule. That's the one you see most of the time. And it says within 60 days of submission of the petition, the agency shall either deny with specific reasons or initiate the rulemaking process, and it tells you how to do that. In my memory, if you are to deny it, you have to give specific reasons, and you also have to give sort of the reasons of the denial, specifically addressing the concerns of the petitioner and, where appropriate, the alternative means by which it will address the concerns. So a number of these petitions have been, like in hunting, I'd like a three-point season in this place. And often the staff come and say, we got this petition, we recommend you deny it, but we're going to wrap it into the next three-year rulemaking, which starts, you know, in 2 months. So it's in other cases, you have directed the staff to initiate rulemaking, and they've done that. It's been things that you know, are appropriate for. But there is a time limit, and so it does require pretty fast addressing them. Nothing prevents you from doing them on regular meetings. It's just we've often used the conference call as the tool to do it.
Has there been any kind of abuse where, you know, I could imagine someone gaming the system and putting out somebody... you can imagine someone who didn't even turn their cell phone off.
I swear, I just checked.
The question would be, could someone game the system and have a bunch of their pals put in 279 petitions and therefore paralyze the system, so to speak? And that statute would say, you know, you got 60 days, you got to deal with all of them.
True, you would. We haven't seen that. We also, our office helps your staff. Some people will, for instance, write a thing called a petition and put it at a local store and say, hey, everybody sign up and let's write the department to encourage them to open up this place. And so sometimes the staff will call the contact person or whoever the leader is and say, is this a little p petition where it's really a group of people who are making a comment, you know, and aren't trying to trigger this process? They're just trying to say, you know, 100 people in this area would like you to consider this thing. And we did it all by you just sign up at the grocery store or the local store or something like that. So the staff does reach back out to these petitioners early on and try to resolve the issue if they can. Find out, you know, is this the formal tool they're trying to use, or just... we're just trying to give you a signal as to some public comment. But there hasn't been a huge abuse about it.
Bill, it seems like our last meeting or conference call, we did deny a petition from the prospecting group, but we included an explanation that described the process that we were going to undertake to further investigate the issue that they put forward. I think that's an example of how we dealt with a petition recently.
Okay. So I'll keep thinking about it, but I did want to flag that as something that, you know, maybe we can just deal with by thinking about it the next time we get one and working on it right before that, and if we need to do a bigger discussion about it. Thank you.
I have a few comments, but I'm going to wait till our colleagues do opening comments. Open it up for other. Barbara, did you want to do an update?
I can.
Yep.
So, Barbara Baker here, speaking a bit to the principles that govern the agency. I've been working through the Big Tent Committee to talk about whether we should to talk about at least. My impression that we should look at the principles which guide us and look at whether, at least look at what some other states and some of the current initiatives that are going through across the country are. And so what we've been looking at is the North American model, which is a good one, and the sort of standard Fish and Wildlife Guidance Principles, and we've also been looking at a group of newer principles called the 10 Principles of Wildlife Management. Originally came out of Cornell University by a person named Dr. Decker, then went through the AFWA process, championed by a person that some of you know, including Director Unsworth, Nick Wiley, who's now the Florida director. And then also championed by a group called the Wildlife Management Institute, of which a person named Chris Smith works there, and he's willing to come over and talk to us about these principles. I would love to just hear There's even the way it's put on our page here, it says North American Conservation Model versus another approach. My approach isn't to have any versus in there. I think they work very well together. But it's a way for us to update our principles and actually make it clear that we are also trying to serve non-consumptive users, people who like to hike, people who like to birdwatch, all of that as part of our conservation initiative. So I guess the reason for that is to let you know that we have been updating, we have been working through the Big Tent Committee. I'd like to put inviting either Chris Smith or Nick Wiley, probably working with Director Unsworth, on our March, what do we call this, workshop agenda, and wondered if that's okay with the rest of the commissioners.
And there again, I don't have a really good idea of the concept you're talking about, and I
thoroughly understand the versus deal, but if we're going to come in, do we need somebody from the quote-unquote traditional side too? Because there again, I guess it's just whatever you've grown up with, and I guess I ascribe to the North American model because I see a big check on my bucket list is to go to Africa and go hunting. And if there wasn't hunting in Africa, there probably wouldn't be nearly as much game in Africa as there is today. So I guess all I'm saying, before we just hear one side of a debate, I think we ought to have both sides. So if we need to get an SCI member or something to come and listen, and if we do end up in a versus, at least we could hear both sides.
Jay, that's totally up to you. I really don't think of this as a versus, and we aren't going to be taking any positions or making any decisions. Also, the states that adopt these principles don't really adopt them. What they do is they feed them into their policymaking processes, and they go through a what amounts to a questionnaire to see kind of where they are on the spectrum. So I would hope that anybody who wanted to come talk to us or listen would be there. What I'm worried about is I don't want to set it up initially as a contest, because it's absolutely not intended to be.
No, and I thoroughly understand and I respect your attitude there, but it's still, like I said, right, wrong, indifferent, I still see the upside to it, and there again, we don't need to end up in a cage fight over which side wins, but if we're going to invite one side, I think we need to maybe invite so we get a full round. That's just food for thought, whether you like it, that's fine. If you think it's meritable, if not, then I'm fine the other way.
Director?
Yeah, I did talk to Chris Smith when we were in at the last WAFO meeting, and Chris doesn't represent one side or the other. He works for the Wildlife Management Institute. He used to work for Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and then before that, Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I think he would come and inform the commission on both the North American model and these wildlife governance principles, and I think would provide an objective look. He doesn't have a dog in the fight one way or another. He's not someone that we'd need to worry about. I think he'd provide a nice presentation for the commission. He also does a really good presentation on just general wildlife management, wildlife stewardship, and a few other things that the commission might find. But he's more than willing to come. He asked me when. So if I could tell him March, that'd be great. He's ready to come over. He's just in Helena, so he'd drive over to Wenatchee.
Yeah, I second that, Jay. I appreciate where you're coming from, and I understand that this isn't, my understanding, it's more or less, there's value added, so it enhances everything. Did you have...
I'm done, thank you.
Okay, let me just piggyback. I have one thing to share. I was at the WAFWA meeting for a couple days, and what I just handed out is what the main meeting of the directors and commissioners. There were two commissioners from Oregon there, a couple from other states, the meeting is in Oregon this summer, so it's our hope that more of us can go down to that. The one in the winter really is more business. One in the summer has a nice field trip with it, too. They float. What river is it they're going to float?
Yeah. The Mackenzie.
Okay. Yeah. These are some of the topics that were raised, and you can just see. And there were most states were represented from draw down the Mississippi, west of the Mississippi. So on some issues, like what do we have in common with South Dakota? You know, there's some areas, but a lot of things are not that we don't have in common. But interesting presentations. Chronic wasting disease, big thing. I mean, that's scary. The graphs that they're showing, and. It's spreading, and but that was that took up a large part of the morning. Another interesting one was number six, and I'm gonna ask for this presentation so we can share it online. They looked at again. This is kind of the mutual benefits between outdoor recreation and hunting. And non-hunting uses. So they interviewed principally on duck hunters and how they viewed wildlife watching, bird watching, and it really paired quite nicely. So it was complementary in how it benefits the wetland acquisition, the wetland for hunters, but also other uses throughout the rest of the year. So I just wanted to share that with you. It was an interesting meeting. a lot of different issues around the states. Anybody have any questions of me about that? It was 2 days, so okay. Well, we're still waiting for our other two colleagues. You.
Just a comment that this meeting in July, I believe it is, in Eugene. We've talked about efforts to meet with the Oregon Commission. Okay. There might be some potential for those of us to attend that. It is probably, I would expect that we'd see attendance by other Oregon commissioners. It might be an opportunity.
Yeah, good idea. I think we could arrange that. I can contact their chair.
All right.
Oregon is the host, even though it was in San Diego, because they didn't want to have the winter one in Oregon. So the winter one was in San Diego. And then the summer ones in San Diego. So Oregon is the host, but that makes a lot of sense. So
yeah, might be an opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. I imagine most of their commission will be there.
Yeah, I would expect.
And for us, it's an easy drive down. So.
Yeah.
Question. Agenda item number 4 about the funding efforts for other states around the horn. I just wondered how things are going with the other Western agencies in terms of funding. If things are starting to turn around a little bit, or if they're greatly uncertain, or how
the director can follow. I'll just kick it off. The issues are real. I mean, they're concerned about federal cutbacks. All the issues we talk about are mirrored, but I think ours are more intense given the breadth of issues that we have that a lot of other states don't have. Looking at new constituencies, how do you fund that? I mean, and some of the traditional thoughts, birdseed, binoculars, all that was talked about. No magic bullet, just a lot of ongoing discussion. That's why I think Barbara was talking about having Chris, you know, we have to come up with some new ideas to help fund, because what everybody agrees to is that the traditional users, of which I am one, when we hit 70, drop off the map rather rapidly, which is the funding. And those graphs that are shown at WAFWA or AFWA are rather scary in that sense. And when I was talking to George Harris the other day, we mentioned this before, but he said every year the visitation at the Seattle Boat Show, the average age goes up by 1 year. 1 year.
So. We've already come close to tapping out a lot of the hunters and fishers in the state. I mean,
Oh,
yeah, it's a concern in every state, especially some states that have a limited access. I mean, they don't have a variety of things that they can license. You know, you can have pheasants or ducks or whitetail or something like that. Did I'm missing some stuff?
Yeah, I think that's a good summary. That almost every state is in some stage of looking at the fee increase. You either just got one, and you get about 3 years, and then you're starting to think about another one. And so Idaho just got one successfully. It took them about 8 years. I was working on it when I was there. It just depends on where you're at in that plateauing cycle. But most states, or many states, don't have, we're unique that we have the state general fund and the proportion of it that we do. Lots of the interior western states are totally sportsman dollar or federally funded or grants funded. And so been real interesting for them, even talking about broadening their funding. They have some resistance from some of their traditional users that they are afraid of losing influence. So I'm going to talk more about in the director's report tomorrow, but other big items, this whole Recovering Americans Wildlife Act is one of the biggest things going on right now in AFWA and WAFWA, and I'll give you an update on that tomorrow.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting thing when the director talks about that, because that there's, I don't know, given the political landscape we're in now, whether it does have a chance, but it is the number one priority of AFWA to work on this, and they've hired some new staff to do outreach on that, so, and we would stand to benefit quite nicely from it. Other things while we wait, we want to jump in. I just hesitate to get into some of the stuff that, if like on the commission meetings, because then we're going to have to rebrief, or they're not here. Jay? JJ?
Whoops. Jeez.
Cut up.
He's talking to you.
Pacific Salmon Commission.
Yeah, Phil Anderson's going to give us a briefing on Pacific Salmon Commission progress.
He'll be here about 3 o'clock, too.
Okay.
One thing that I'll mention, if we have dead air, is
we're really getting some positive feedback on our application, on our app. I don't know how many of you have downloaded that. I sent you the link to download. It's really fantastic. I think within the first few days, we've already had several hundred people, and so that's going to really pick up as people tell their pals and friends. But it's a pretty cool thing. Most people are pretty excited about it. And now is when we'll get the kind of feedback we need on where it screws up, you know, because it's so complicated. But that's part of the beta testing. But that's really exciting. We're getting a lot of positive feedback on that one. Have you used it, Dave? Or?
Yes, and I've been very excited about the development of this tool. It really will help people that typically may not even pick up the pamphlet when they buy their license. But when they're in the field, it's such an easy way to find out how they can comply with rules where they're actually fishing or hunting, you know, in this case, fishing. But I'm sure there will be some bugs, but now that we have it available to the general public, we're going to get really important feedback. One of the obvious issues that I run into in my region is cell coverage. And but, you know, that's a given, and that's going to improve. And the fact that we're sort of ahead of the curve in terms of that, I think it's one of the best advancements that the department has made in terms of the public being able to access and comply with rules when they're in the field. it dovetails nicely with the rule simplification process that we're going to through, in that we're just trying to make things easier for people to enjoy their time outdoors without concern about whether they're following the rules or not, and contribute to the success. One of the things that I particularly enjoyed when I was first got on it was the availability of the videos that the department produces. Those are great learning tools, and it gives people access to those even while they're at a destination. And the more of those that we can provide the public, I think, will be very welcome. I mean, just the little dabbling in the video arena that I've done has already received over 1 million views. And so it's very popular with the public in terms of learning. And so the more we can do with that and access it through this, which we are already doing, is a real positive thing.
One of the things, and I don't know if the audience, if you sportsmen have downloaded it yet, but I was on fishing the hump tulips the other day, and I was in my drift boat floating a section I hadn't floated before, and because it's GPS enabled and tells you right where you're at, it was really fantastic because I could watch how my day was going and know where my takeout was and
sure.
Know how I was progressing as far as daylight was. It was really terrific. Otherwise, I would have been rowing out in the dark like I have lots of times.
But yeah. You know, that's an element I hadn't even considered.
Yeah, the GPS part really works great if you have cell coverage, and it's really a neat thing.
Yeah, how about the big log jam right around the corner?
It didn't show that, but someday down the road, you could probably put something in there that you could comment. You could click this spot, and you could write in there comments as a safety issue or something. I know that's possible, but I'm not saying we're going to do it, but I know it's possible.
If somebody finds a good fishing hole, and they'll say, watch out, stay away from here.
Snags, no good.
Yeah, there was a lot of interest at WAF about leadership in this role that Washington was taking, about how do we do it, how can they do it, and stuff like that.
Yeah, the other states are really excited about the technology and want to do it.
Yeah, so let me just compliment anybody who came up with that original idea. I saw it. I put it on here. I've had the cell phone downloading of the base problem or something, so I haven't actually used it yet. But I know we were out fishing along the South Jetty at the mouth of the Columbia River and caught a lingcod and didn't know what the size limit was. And so we scrambled around and couldn't find the booklet, or the book up was all wet from a wave or something. And we tried the phone calls. That didn't work. So we let the fish go, and turns out it was fine to have kept. But this would have been something very nice there to do that. So it's a great idea. I wonder if there's any other ideas out there that are coming, because the cell phone is the way of the future for so many things. And licensing came to mind, too. Mm-hmm. We had a kid on the boat whose license blew out and flew away, gone. And so is there any ideas about doing that?
Yeah, there is, and a few states now have gone to paperless licensing, and it's on your phone. I think the states where it's been most successful have been Midwestern states. Kansas, I think, has done it. Or no, not Kansas, Oklahoma. And but they have pretty much statewide cell coverage. So their fishing license is on there, and also their deer tags. And you, when you kill a deer, you electronically mark your tag on your phone, and then when you're checked by an officer, you can document it. Other states have gone to paperless licensing with credit card like stuff, and you get whatever you buy loaded onto a credit card, and then the officer can scan it in their pickup, and it'll come up what you want. But no, I think there's big potential. Conservation officers are a little concerned that there'd be workarounds, or guys would figure out ways to get around it, or last minute buying it or something.
Russians
like that. You see the game warden down the river and you hurry and buy a license. I don't know, but I think that there's some big potential. I
fish tickets is an obvious one to me. I mean, why have paper fish tickets when you could do them, report your catch immediately, and then it would upload into a database weekly, so it would be more real-time sampling for our fisheries.
I'm glad you brought that up for record. I put in a blue sheet almost a year ago on electronic fish accounting, and I would truly like to get that teed up, and I mean electronic fish accounting across all fisheries, recreational, commercial, tribal, all of them. So we can manage the fisheries better because we know what's going on, and I think it's something that's very doable and very economically viable.
So. I'll check where we're at.
Would you do that?
Yeah, I will.
March. It's March? Slated for the March meeting.
Oh. Good.
Okay. I guess it's okay to do it when that's you. I just, that's fine. I'm okay with that. Yeah. I just want to get it out there so we can start working on it.
You know, Larry, I'm glad that you brought that up, too, because in today's world, when it comes, and again, I'm just talking about fisheries management issues, and in my region, we're actually counting fish daily,
yeah.
Whether we're going to hit our thresholds with our release fisheries, you know, how many wild fish we've released it. And to be able to do that by phone, I think we're way past the feasibility of catch record cards. We're so far behind, and I don't know, Jim, what the turnaround is, but when we're managing fisheries almost daily in many areas now, whether it's Puget Sound or the Mehow River, and we're working off of catch record cards I can't see the value of these. Because sometimes the turnaround is, I'm going to guess, 18 months. So what is the real value? You know, and
it's certainly not real time management.
Well, no.
When I turned in that blue sheet, if I may,
yeah.
I intended it to be as far reaching as shellfish, crab, shrimp, halibut, lingcod. So that was the intent.
Right. You know, and there has been some criticism about moving in this direction maybe too fast. There are still a lot of people that participate in hunting that, you know, I have heard complaints about they want to get their permits for the next hunting season, and they used to go to the local office and help them do that.
Yeah.
And to do it via the internet when they don't have satellite or even satellite capability. So there's still a certain percentage of our user group that's not up to speed on that.
And, pretty small.
But at the same time, I don't want to slow down the technology.
Yeah.
Like, we need to have that. But we also need to accommodate those that don't have the capability. That's all I'm saying.
In the Matrix report, you know, they had a section in there that, and they had some suggestions that there's some software out there that is starting to improve website sampling for opinion surveying. And it's always been been a problem, and probably still is, that you don't get a random distribution of feedback from internet, you know, and but there's a bunch of graduate students running around right now, I'm sure, trying to figure that out. I think within the next few years we'll see improvements in that. We'll see, you know, I think we're going to see the fish tickets and those kind of improvements. One of the things that, and the big expenses we have when we set up a fishery, a great example is the Skagit right now. You know, if we can, if we get the go-ahead from NOAA, we want to have a catch-and-release fishery this spring. It's expensive to do the creel that's adequate to meet muster, you know, to actually promulgate the fishery. So there's probably some ways that we could improve that kind of stuff into the future, too. So, and that, by the way, we are going to have that fishery, and we're going to have it as long as we can, and we're going to find the money to do the creel it. So I've been getting a bunch of letters and feedback. People were real worried it was only going to be 2 weeks, and we're going to have it as long as we, you know, whatever the biological framework is. We're going to.
I'm glad you brought that up because I got a lot of heat over it.
Yeah.
And staff up in Mill Creek last Friday suggested it would be a 14-day fishery when originally it was targeted to be a 90-day fishery. What do you want to wait on that to comment, or do you have your arms?
Staff were looking at their budgets, and they hadn't heard me say that we were going to have the fishery. And I reminded them that we were going to do that.
They also need to know, I think it's fair that that the stakeholders came in front of us back in December and said, hey, we'll help you with the money if that's what it takes to get this thing going, and they still would, I suspect. I haven't talked to them.
Oh, yeah, we'll certainly take checks. Yeah, we want to have that fishery. I know it's important. Just from the turnout at the two public meetings we've had, we probably had 300 folks show up that are really excited about fishing for steelhead on this gadget.
So. Not to mention you would want to go, Director.
I would like to go.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. On that topic, you know, I served on the endorsement board since its inception and served on it almost 6 years until I was appointed to this commission. And we were very careful in structuring the endorsement program, knowing that it could be transferred and applied to other areas. And it seems to me that right now Puget Sound is ripe for that sort of a program, because when you mention the Skagit, well, under the endorsement program as it exists on the Columbia River and its tributaries, the funding would accommodate that. And that's the intent, is to provide for the necessary creel census, monitoring, enforcement, all of those things. And I think that we would find Puget Sound anglers and maybe even encompass the peninsula, because it's not a large enough area to create enough funding. But if we made it Puget Sound wide and even included those fisheries, I think we'd get enough funding that would accommodate a lot of those potential shortfalls that could potentially close a fishery for lack of funding. That was the whole purpose of the endorsement stamp, and I think it's something that should be explored to help with the efforts to maintain fisheries in Puget Sound.
Yeah, I don't know, they're stuck in the airport or something. So, Don, you want to go through your stuff?
Sure, we can do that. So, Cammy, before you hand this out, let me just say that on the matter of the committee structure and process matter that started up in Port Angeles as a question about whether going to an more open and transparent committee structure might be useful exploring. In October, we looked at a pros and cons matrix, if you recall. And so there was a couple of different options at that time and a listing of pros and cons. We said, okay, well, let's take it to the next stage of analysis. So after that October meeting, I started working with Joe Storr and Bill Freymeyer. I gave Joe an outline and said, could we have a staff report here, and could we have our legal counsel go through, in particular with reference to the Open Public Meetings Act part of it, make sure that that's all, that analysis is all in it. And we went back and forth on a draft analysis for a while, and I had more input into that than probably I'm ever going to have on any other staff-related report that we're going to ever do again. But we got to a stage where Tammy has a draft now that I'd like to walk everybody through and explain what's there. And it will show a lot of red font and yellow highlight in areas where Bill had some concerns about what might show up in any sort of a final report. And rather than try to struggle over what language to put in there or try to do it verbally, we thought maybe if we just hand this out and when we focus on some of these areas, we can have a discussion about that. This is tentatively scheduled to be on the agenda for a commission decision in February. And so I thought it would be useful if I just kind of walked you guys through this, and then we could have a discussion about that and whether or not there needs to be more analysis or where people might want to go. And at the end of this presentation, I thought about my colleague Jay Caney and how he is so adept at coming up with a compromise at things, and so I'm going to offer right off the get-go some sort of a little compromise here. But anyway, starting with the issue statement, it says...
Excuse me, John. Yeah. Some of it's in red and some of it's in yellow. Is that one of Freymeyer's concerns, the other one somebody else's concerns, or...
Why don't you think of the red and the yellow both as areas of some concern? I don't know if some of this Bill would say those are my concerns or not, but I think yellow highlight was particular areas where there's a question of, you know, is that how we really want to characterize this? The red is more some language that we thought maybe we ought to take another look at that. But I wouldn't necessarily characterize it as just Bill's concern. And Bill and Joe are both here, and anytime I don't portray this accurately, please jump in. And
the two different colors.
The issue statement there is shows that there's a concern about the committee structure and process not being open and transparent to non-committee commission members and the public, and thereby not providing the opportunity for all for a full understanding of the basis and rationale behind committee recommendations to the commission. So this document here is to explain the current practice and identify alternatives. I think in October is when the commission identified the alternatives. You'll see the next paragraph talks about what the Open Public Meetings Act requires, and that the red font there, with any decision-making limited to committee-only decisions or recommendations to the full commission, I think that is an appropriate point. The matter of what exactly is a decision, what's a baby step decision, what's an incremental decision, and certainly what is out of bounds is a committee ever making a decision on behalf of the commission. So the analysis talks about process transparency, staff workload, annual costs, effect on the length of full commission meetings, and compliance with the Open Public Meetings Act. Alternative one is described here. I think you all know it. There's an attachment at the very end that's right out of our procedures that describes it. In terms of that description, the current language says that current rules provide for the inclusion of, quote, interested individuals or groups in committee evaluations, but not any non-committee commissioners and not the public. In recent practice, committee meetings have been closed meetings involving the committee member or alternates and the department staff without other interested individuals or groups. That's in a yellow highlight. I'm not sure how far back in recent practice goes, but anyway, that's I haven't heard of times when the committees have brought in interested individuals or groups. So this particular red font and yellow highlight might be a matter of how far back you go and say something that's factual. In the status quo, you'll see in yellow there some recent examples illustrating the magnitude of decision-making possible by committees. So again, the current rules say that the committees are charged with doing some little decision-making anyway, including coming up with more detailed analysis of issues. They can evaluate issues and determine if the full commission should even consider them, explore impacts of policy suggestions, explore alternatives. So there is some committee work that the concern that's out there is that the public doesn't know what's going on inside a committee meeting and can maybe imagine the worst. And you get characterizations of secret meetings and backroom deals and things like that that nobody knows is true or false. But if you weren't there and you don't like the result, you might accuse that. And so there was a couple of examples here. One is a fish example and one is a wildlife example. The fish example was a January 2017 commission meeting, and there was two options apparently that were out for discussion before the meeting. There was a third option that came out of the committee, and the committee adopted that without change by a 7-2 vote of the commission. And as I read the policy, that was entirely legitimate. The committee can make a recommendation, and the commission can vote for it. And the concern there was the public and the other non-committee commissioners may not know why that particular option came around and what the justification was for it and the rest. The wildlife example is a roadkill matter. Joe, I think the staff brought this one up. And again, it talks about something coming out of the committee process the committee asked the staff to do some more work on it. And when it came out of the committee, it was adopted in March of 2016 without any change. Now, in our discussions, and one of the reasons why this is yellow is that the concern was there was some briefings of the full commission about it.
Point of clarification, it wasn't brought to us by the staff. It was brought to us by this guy right here.
It was his whole brainchild. And
okay.
And in fact, when it was brought to the staff wasn't overly happy about it.
Okay.
And so, no, it was driven totally by this guy, and I couldn't agree with him more. So to say it was brought to us by the staff, uh-uh.
Okay. Well, if staff was asked to look into it and staff did the work on it and the committee recommended it to the commission and the commission adopted it, again, I feel that's playing according to Hoyle.
Yeah. And Jay did his homework on it, brought his numerous rules from numerous states surrounding. So, no, okay. It was definitely driven by him. And I'd read on it and was in 1,000% support of it right from the get-go.
Okay. And then there's also a lot of examples, I guess, where committees do some business and there ends up not being any recommendation to the full commission. But there is decision-making going on at the committee level. Maybe it's to kill an idea that never does then come before the commission. And if you weren't there, you don't know what happened, is the open and transparent, I don't know if I'd call it problem, but call it criticism or concern.
I think that's probably at the heart of all of this, is the idea to be out in committees is where it can be more relaxed conversation around some of these topics isn't to hide them from the public, but the next step, and I believe we've typically done this correct, and maybe in some instances haven't, but typically it would be just a recommendation from the committee to the full commission. The full commission could take it up at that point and have a big, healthy discussion about it. I think what kind of can happen is that, well, if you four over there spend a lot of time on this in your committee world and you're making a recommendation, maybe the discussion isn't as thorough as it should be. And so I think that's at the heart of how we go about thinking about this, because if we're shortchanging that discussion process of the full commission, then I think a change needs to be made. But I don't think in typically we've done anything wrong in the past, but I think you brought it up at a meeting once where you said, well, a recommendation coming from the four of you is pretty close to a decision by the four of you. And that's really at the heart of this issue. And so I'm glad you were bringing it up and thinking it through and having this discussion.
I have to choir in with Jay on this, because we've had the baiting issue was another one that, I mean, yeah, there was four of us in there, but we were basically two against two. So, I mean, we discussed it, went around and around and around, and there is no way on earth that the full commission could spend that much time on something like that. You know? Real perceived are two different things. And as far as I mean, you look at the structure of the commission in general. We got butchers, bakers, and candlestick makers from one end of the state to the other. So if these committees are structured properly, I think they get vetted really well. And there again, I think it's a good deal to go back and look at it, but nobody's more cynical about government than I am. And after being here 4 years, I don't see any backdoor, behind the scenes, underhanded stuff done by any of these committees. And I'll take that, I'll debate that all day long with anybody. And like I said, I'm cynical when it comes to government. So I don't know. I just think we've got to be really careful about looking. If there was a problem, yeah, we need to look for a solution and going back and revisiting this and talking it through and make certain we all come to the same thing. But boy, we better be really careful what we're doing here, because I think we've got a structure that works very well.
Well, let me ask you just to hold on to that thought. And as we go through the various options, it's going to come back to really a question of, well, what's wrong with letting the public or a non-committee commissioner sit in the audience and listen?
So I would like to say that I agree that just going through and having a thorough discussion is very important. I do want to comment on if when you say baiting, you're talking about the hound hunting issue. Oh, it's a different one? Because it was hound hunting. When that came up, a problem for me was that I was very interested in that topic, and I wanted to have I wanted to sit in on the committee meeting. And I actually went to the committee meeting, and I couldn't stay. And there's something that if we have the what I would like us to do is possibly bring ourselves in line with most of the other major commissions, and I consider this a major commission and an honor to sit on it. But I'd like us to look at the way that others do it and how much of a problem it is to be able to have the input. Anybody who wants to be able to hear what we're heard, which is not to say that we have to turn committee meetings into mini commission meetings, because we don't have to do that. So I'm real happy that we're having this conversation.
And maybe I'll cut to the chase a little bit. This is a long document. I'm not going to sit here and read it to you, but let me just describe the options that were out there, and then I'm going to end up saying that there's not that much difference in annual costs when you look at across them. There's not that much difference in staff workload when you look across at them. Maybe a little bit there. They all comply with the Open Public Meetings Act. Every one of the options can do that.
Just a question. The options that present themselves, are those options that were gleaned, like Barbara said, from other commissions? Or?
No, these were the options that were identified by the commission at the October meeting.
Okay, just that.
Just that. So, and let me run through those. Option one is status quo. Option two is the same as status quo, except that it's open to the public, and it's open to a non-committee commissioner who wants to sit in the audience like a member of the public. Option three is keep the closed committee meetings but have mandatory concurrent reports to the full commission. Right now, we are required to have reports, but it hasn't always been at the same meeting. Option four is no committee meetings. And I think Bob Kehoe is the one that said, let's put that out there for discussion. Obviously, it's going to make for a little bit longer commission meetings if we did that one. And number five was ad hoc committee meetings only. So of these options, if Bob was here, he might speak to option number four, which is let's just eliminate committees. Personally, in matter of discussion, I think committees are very useful. I like the idea of them, the concept of them, and all the rest of that. So I've been focusing just on option one or two. Stay with the status quo, or on option two, open it up to the public. And if you look at the features of the analysis, what's the process transparency different? Well, the current one that's closed is not as open and transparent as option two, where it's open. The staff workload is a little bit more. The annual costs are about the same. The effect on the length of full commission meetings is about the same. Compliance with the Open Public Meetings Act is about the same. So really, what's the difference here? The difference is, we heard a little bit about this in the either October or December meeting, there's a casual nature about committee meetings. You can have them in the evening, and you can have them over breakfast, and this and that. It's a little more casual. That doesn't strike me as the best reason to exclude the public from watching. This is my part of the discussion, my opinion anyway. I think there's some value in having the public be able to watch. It's like the public's watching right now in this workshop. What's there to hide about it? Nothing. When you have it open, it proves what Jay Holzmiller said, that there isn't any skullduggery going on in the back room. I don't believe there is any, but it proves it. And so so that's the way I would be leaning on this discussion thing. And I guess in terms of the John Calhoun option, that if there are some pros and cons to all of this, and some people might be leaning toward the status quo, that perhaps just the Fish Commission or Fish Committee as a pilot test in 2018 go forward with an open committee process. The wildlife stay the same. Big tent stay the same. Habitat, enforcement, the rest stay the same. Because I don't think that some of the possible negatives of having the public or non-committee commission members sitting in the audience will prove out to be that big of a deal. So there's my...
Thank you. Where to start? I don't think any of us here would be opposed to having more public involved in committees. Because like Jay says, there's nothing to hide. I am still concerned, no matter what's written here, because I know how committee meetings occur, and I know what time they take up. So I attend 3 hours of committee meetings every time we get together. So usually 2 hours for wildlife at breakfast, because you got to eat. And we have them during that time frame at 6:30 to before we come to the meeting at 8:30. We usually have a lunch meeting on enforcement on the committee. And if I'm lucky enough, I get another hour somewhere in there for the Habitat Committee. So that's 4 hours. It's not docketed. It's not scheduled. It's nobody's time but the staff that comes, and that's important. But it's using our commissioner time in that way. If we switch to where those 4 hours are open for the public, they aren't during breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So they are additive to the whole time we spend. And I could very easily say, and I think you'd have to think it through, but we would be adding another half a day to commission meetings. So now we spend a day and a half typically. Right now we're in a pattern of an extra half a day because of that. And I think the public needs to know that too. But for the gain you're getting, so you could occasionally sit in on these meetings or sit in as often as you want, there's a real cost to this in terms of, that we're having to be there that much longer, that staff has to prepare a different type of presentation. I'm not against that. I mean, I'm fine with that, actually. I don't think this is not an argument about do we want the public involved in our committees or not. It's the logistics of it. And if we're willing to do that, if everyone here is willing to commit what I think would be that amount of additional time, so we're now having a full day's meeting on Friday, a full day meeting on Saturday, and go home on whenever, or vice versa, we do what we're doing here, a half a day on Thursday just for committee meetings, I think there is more addition in cost and staff time and our time than is laid out here. It's not par. Because of when we typically have our committee meetings, and that's lunch, breakfast, dinner, at times when we wouldn't be able to do that in a reasonable manner. Let's have a breakfast meeting at Bud Bay Cafe and invite the public. Where are they going to sit? What are they going to have for breakfast? Are you going to pay for that? No, that's not a good description, but the logistics don't allow that. So you typically would have to say, okay, let's do it after this meeting closes from 5 to 7. I'm sorry, but I'm a little hungry at that point. I'm going to have dinner. Okay, let's do it from 7 to 10, and we'll have all our committee meetings. You're starting to become unreasonable, I think, on what a volunteer board gives. But if the group feels that it's that important, I think there's not anyone here that wouldn't give it. That to me is the discussion. It doesn't. The logistics are tough. If we can figure a way around that, I'm all for it. Like Jay says, there's nothing to hide. There never has been. It's not what it's about. It's just logistically makes it much harder, I think.
You know, just to piggyback on that, I think last meeting was the worst or best in terms of committee because I had a breakfast, lunch, and dinner committee meeting. So it was...
Yeah, and somehow we have to fit that into a time frame where public can be there, staff can be there, at a location that has to be arranged by Tammy that requires pre-notice, that requires taking everything. And then at that point, I think, well, then I kind of go with the four alternative. Why worry about committees? Just lengthen the commission meeting, and we'll discuss it all in front of everybody. Because if I'm a chair of a committee, and after changing to a role where we now have public involved in all committee meetings, and something is important enough that I suggest to that staff, this needs to come in front of the whole committee, now we've really doubled our time. I mean, more than doubled our time when we should have just had it come before the whole commission to begin with. So I'm not against any of the alternatives at this point. There's some that I can't get my head around yet.
And let me suggest that if there are issues that you're wondering whether they should come before the whole committee, the commission, or be in a committee, they probably ought to be before the whole commission. But I strongly support committee work for all the rest of it that's not like that, that's more casual, that could be just briefings, could be identical to what we have now, and that saves the full commission a lot of work. And, some people might not want to even attend a fish committee meeting because they're going to trust the other commissioners that are in there. And some people might not want to even attend a wildlife committee meeting when 85% of it is going to be that kind of casual, lengthy, dig in, roll up your sleeves type talk that would take a long time at the full commission table, but is a good thing. But if someone wanted to sit in on it, they would not be able to now.
Dave?
I just wanted to echo what Jay is saying here. I don't think it's fair to say it doesn't take more staff time and it doesn't take more logistics or other costs. The alternative where we open this to the public requires more formality. It requires a notice in advance, and it requires rooms. And there's other elements that would add cost. And also, I think Jay makes a very good point about the time demands. In our last meeting, this meeting, and I think in February, we're adding, I think, up to 9 hours for workshops, for discussions on budget, some other items, beyond what we normally do. And that does not count the committee meetings. And so it's hard for me to see how we can accommodate that without adding probably a day to our current schedule and structure of our meetings. And so I think there are costs. I think there are formalities that are involved. And the logistics just get to be fairly daunting. And I agree with Jay, too. I mean, I'm saying that whatever the commission feels is appropriate, I would agree to. But currently, I feel like the work that is done in committee that doesn't arrive in front of the commission, full commission, for consideration is very rare. We know we don't make decisions. If there's a topic that needs exploration and staff time, it's brought to the full commission and in the form of a briefing. But I do feel that we need to do a better job. I like the current committee structure. We need to do a better job of reporting to the commission what occurred, during that meeting. I think that the briefings need to be more detailed than we've had in the past.
Can I just make one, as we keep the thread going here, this business about longer meetings, that's on our workshop thing. I am not in favor of longer meetings. And so right now we've got these workshops in the afternoon. This is a temporary thing. The proviso thing is a temporary thing. That would be an opportunity for a committee meeting in the afternoon the day before to take this. I'm not sure when you go back through history whether you all came here on, in this case, Thursday afternoon anyway, and could have had a committee meeting before the dinner hour. So I think there's a way of managing the agenda here. Sometimes on our main agenda, we have non-decisional briefings that, maybe someone could ask, what's more important, a committee meeting or that? So I'm in favor of staying to the model of a full day on Friday, a half a day on Saturday, come in the afternoon before, and not adding this on top of other things. And so if it ever came down to adding another full day to what we have this week, I would not be in favor of that. And in terms of meeting rooms around here, I'm not sure where the committees are going to be meeting around here right now, but where a breakfast meeting might happen tomorrow morning, if there is one, I don't even know, then if it was in this building, what's wrong with the public watching that? Where are you going to get your breakfast anyway? So,
just quick comment, Don. Thank you very much for a very thorough presentation on this and examination. I really do appreciate it. This is something I wouldn't have the patience to do. And that, I think, speaks to what Jay mentioned earlier, is the variety of expertise that's represented on this board, and you bring in a valuable aspect to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Don, I think I have, from my perspective, an option nine.
Nine? Okay.
And I'll give you an example.
I won't be writing this.
This is sort of my democratic / undemocratic approach to getting business done, becoming more efficient. An example given on the Wildlife Committee that Jay Keeney chairs, the issue arose about baiting that Commissioner Baker was most interested in, that she really wanted to attend.
Hound hunting,
whatever it may be. Bird watching, I don't know. I think a consideration would be for Commissioner Baker to go to the chair to talk to you. The chair then and you would determine that having Barbara Baker come and sit in for one of the other commissioners on there is more beneficial to the committee because of passion for that particular subject. And one of the commissioners stand down. Now, may not work 100% of the time, but I think it could help get the people with an extreme amount of passion about an issue to the table. And over a period of time, I think it would work out. And other commissioners would become more literate about some of the details that we're on doing. And, maybe somebody's going to get their feeling hurt once in a while, but that's not what this is about. It's about getting the job done. So, anyway, an idea.
Good idea,
Jay.
I'm sorry.
Jim first.
Hi, everybody. Glad to be here.
did Bob get lost driving?
Yeah.
He does.
Can you get that pilot under control?
He handed me the map, so I have to take some responsibility.
Well, he drives pretty slow.
Oh, is that what it was?
I always drive him. I didn't know he even drove.
The trucks were all passing us.
Sometimes I pass him twice on the same trip.
So, okay.
Careful,
well,
you are.
Glad to be here. Yeah, he's my driver. I better be nice. So, sorry to come late to it. Just a couple of points. One, Don, you brought up, skipping some of the briefings that we have on our commission agenda. I find our briefings extremely valuable, and I can think of few that I would have wanted to have skipped.
Sometimes.
Many of them come out of our own requests through the Blue Sheet process. And I appreciate, that commissioners have a certain interest and understanding and can educate us further through briefings. So that, as well as Another reason we get briefings is it's something that's been discussed in committees that the committee isn't bringing to the commission. So I would be pretty unwilling to give up most of the briefings that I've sat through in the past 3 years to take up other kinds of business. And then my second and largest concern about opening up committee meetings is the burden that it would put on staff, particularly our extremely valuable executive assistant. Opening up meetings requires all sorts of effort on her part, and I would be unwilling to put that burden on Tammy and other staff. I think it would burden as well.
Can we speak a little bit more to what all that burden is, just so we know what all that burden is?
Do you want to talk about it?
I mean, there's noticing the meetings, and there's finding rooms.
Likely rooms we'd have to pay for if we're having 20, who knows how many people show up. So, you know, if you have four committee meetings on Friday, or one Friday, one Thursday, whatever, and then the staff that would have to come to each of those meetings to brief, present whatever they're going to do, you know, likely we wouldn't be able to get four meeting rooms or two extra meeting rooms in the building, at our building, so we'd have to go elsewhere if we were in Olympia. Here, I don't think there's another room big enough to hold a larger public meeting for a committee, you know, 20 people or whatever. So we'd have to have another room other than this one if we were going to have committee meetings. So just...
And so at this meeting, we have two committee meetings, and at the December meeting, we had three committee meetings. In December, we had four? Okay.
Yeah. So if you're a compromiser, what you're doing immediately is trying to flip the hat and talk about the other side.
Okay.
So I'm all for the opening up the committees. That's how I'm thinking now, and how could we make that work? And I'm not saying I am totally all for it, but I think the most important thing is and Larry, but your suggestion wouldn't be a bad way to go about it as far as commissioners are concerned, but it's the public perception would still be out there. Well, so you let another commissioner in, but what about us? We're still out here wondering what goes on in those meetings. So I'm going to suggest a track that might work, and you suggested it, Don, was to set some times that chairs of committees could work with Tammy on, but that time block is going to be a time that we lock in, and they are open to the public, and yes, it would take more work, and they are open to whatever commissioners want to come. They're not part of that process. Well, actually, they could be part of that. No. I have to think that through. They can listen at this point in my mind, but not necessarily be a part of it, because that'd be five of you or six of you in a room. That's the full commission. So they wouldn't be allowed to be a part of that process, but could certainly listen. So the time would be, let's say, Thursday afternoon from, set it, 3 to 6. That's committee time. We also have a time Friday morning from 7 to 9. That's committee time. There's some set times that gives Tammy a way to work this through, find meeting rooms, etc., and the public is more than welcome to come. It's up to the committee chair, I think, at that point to make sure you haven't picked a topic that's going to be discussed in committee that's going to bring an audience of 100 people. You know, that's just not going to work. That should be over in front of the full commission. So baiting wouldn't have been an issue. We necessarily would have tried to discuss out in committee land, because
too much interest. Yeah.
Too much. It's just there'd be too much interest. There'd be 100 people there, and they're not going to get to testify. You know, that's really back over in the realm of the full commission. So I'd like to throw that out, and I don't think it should be just the fish committee. I think what we're discussing here is a better way to do business. that's as open to the public as we decide to make it, and I think we've all said, we're fine, make it as open as we want. We just got to get through the logistics. So I feel it's trying to wrangle our way through the logistics, but it shouldn't just be a fish thing. There's wildlife issues, there's enforcement issues, all of that. And so, yes, it'll be more work on the staff. I think it'll be a little more time from us, but it's within a time frame that we can work, I think, with how we already operate. Change a few things. Like, I usually get to Olympia around 3 o'clock, on Thursday. So, as I work with the Wildlife Committee, we can sort that out. Will that work, or should we have our Wildlife Committee in the morning? And if so, that might be at the same time as the Fish Committee, but, people are just taking those time blocks. So that'd be my thoughts right now, trying to find a way through this and yet meet the needs of the public that we've heard. Because in the end, it's perception.
I really appreciate those comments, Jay, and it's kind of fun to follow your thought process because it...
Follow?
It wandered. but what I wanted to add to that is that I believe what would happen if we tried this for a while is there are some issues that might not go to a committee where three or four commissioners are interested in a particular topic and nobody else really is. So doing this doesn't prevent in any way from us to get together in small groups with staff or other interest groups, flesh out a point, and then bring it back to the commission. And I think we might do more of that if we changed up the committee, the processes by which we had committees. So that's my comments. Thank you for yours.
Bradley. And people don't drive from Clarkston to Olympia for a 15-minute hour presentation. If they've got heartburn, guess who gets a phone call? And there again, if we can't arrive to somebody, I'll point them out to somebody else that was on the other side of it from me. So I don't know. I just hope we're not a solution looking for a problem. I guess that's where I'm coming down at. And there again, there's been different subjects that we're not hiding it from the public, but it's called sausage making. Sometimes you need to know the details from the staff that they truly could not say in public because there's little things, quirks in there. And there again, everybody likes sausage, but you really don't want to see how it's made all the time either. So I don't know. If there's a big, big problem, yeah, we maybe need to address it. But I go back to being the cynic on the group. I've yet to see anything that I've ever thought was underhanded. There's been times, just like you were talking about, the 7-2 vote that came out of the Fish Committee. I remember who the two that voted against it. Nobody was holding a gun to her head saying we had to vote for it. The Fish Committee came up with it. Did we agree with it? No. So we voted against it. So thank you.
Maybe one last thing, and this may be, a lot of it might be the perception thing that you're trying to solve here. For someone who's not on a particular committee, and I don't want this bent around to one particular commissioner, but I've been following this Puget Sound Chinook Management Plan business pretty closely. And there was a Fish Committee meeting that was held in the first part of January that wasn't noticed. They're not supposed to be noticed. I didn't know it was there. I would have felt a little bit short if coming into this meeting there had been some significant committee discussions like that, and I didn't know about them, and might have been prepared to make a motion or ask a question that's already been hashed out at the committee level. And so, I don't know how often, I'm not on the Wildlife Committee, I don't know how often I might really want to be in there just to hear it as another commissioner. I don't know how often you know, Bob might want to hear something in the wildlife area too. So to get to, you know, to get all the commissioners the possibility to get as educated as they can on what the current situation really is, the current thinking of the group, it can't be done right now. And I'm not interested in trying to move anybody off the Fish Committee so I could be on it, or anybody off the Wildlife Committee so I could be on it, or the Habitat Committee, so and on down the line. So anyway, it's just another little element there that the closed part of it might cause a little bit of difficulty. But I guess we've taken up a lot of time on this, if there's any other thoughts from anybody, it might be something we might just want to have further discussions about. If there is an interest in a test pilot of just the Fish Committee, or we can think about Jay's idea as well, and maybe just continue to think about it.
Yeah, I guess that's the question. Where do we take this from here?
I'd like to hear something out of you. Oh. You've been sitting there quiet as quiet.
Thank you, Commissioner Holtzmiller. I do think there is, and I agree with you, there's nothing underhanded going on in these Fish Committee meetings or any other committee meetings for that matter. But that's not just the issue. The issue, though, is the public perception. And I know that's particularly of concern for folks in the commercial fishing sector. You know, you mentioned the Columbia River plan, and I know the commissioners all voted on it, but it was, I think there maintains, there still is a level of distrust, and that's not good. So I think if there is a way that we can alleviate that, and I apologize, my plane was late, or canceled, I should say. So apologize for being late. But if there's a way that we can put those fears, or, you know, the perception of mistrust or the mistrust away, we should look at it. And I am sensitive. I'm not wild about longer meetings or making it difficult for staff. But and certainly I do like Larry's idea. If there is an issue that maybe another commissioner would is keenly interested in, I would be happy to yield my seat. Happy to do that. Just ask me. And if I, so that might be one approach. But I do think that we need to address the perception of lack of transparency in the committee process.
Correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think we could implement Larry's idea immediately. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we could just make a decision to do that. One step forward, because
and then go back to this in the near future and see what we've learned and what we might reconsider. I just think it's something we could start on now
Let me add. If there is a hot potato issue, of which I'll borrow a phrase from Tammy, we should not have a committee for that. Example: Columbia River policy management, not proper, I don't think, in the committee framework at all.
Bill Kim.
In terms of the public perception, I think we've been sensitive to that and trying to add, actually, as part of our agenda now, report outs from the chair. And I think we'll get better at that as we give these presentations and try to let our constituents know what at least we're talking about. And in terms of policy management, it seems to me often that discussion in the committee is boring procedural stuff. that, you know, we really can hammer out with staff, and then it's going to get to the commission.
J1.
I just hate to see us leave here and have to have this whole discussion over again.
Yeah.
So I'm going to suggest something that I think we should try, and that would be set those times aside of Thursday afternoon before a commission meeting, 3 to 6 is committee time. Chairs can work with their staff people, with the people that are on the committee, to figure out what works best. The other time would be Friday morning from 6 to 9. So we're going to bump our meeting a half an hour. We normally start at 8:30. And that's not taking much from our normal...
On Friday or Saturday? Was it?
Friday.
Friday.
And so you've got 6 hours to decide how to use. And to satisfy that public, whatever might be developing out there, mistrust of committees or whatever, just make them open. And that's more work, but at least, and we need to work with Tammy to not overwhelm her. If she says, I've only got 2 rooms that can hold 20 people each, chairs need to have topics that aren't going to fill a room, and we may not have 4 committee meetings that month. You know, you're just going to have to take and prioritize these things. And I think that way, we're giving it a try. If nobody comes to the meetings, if the public's not that interested in what's on the agenda, we can always go back and say, it costs us more time, it's more labor intensive, it's more of a pain. We're just going to go back how we used to do it, except with Larry's idea thrown in there. But without moving ahead now, I feel like we're going to have this discussion next month and the next month and the next month.
A lot of good discussion, and I don't know where to go with it, but I've been like most of you, I've been working since I was 14 years old, and I had a pretty successful career in business, I think. You know, very basically, I think we're doing the best we can do, but there's no way in God's world that we or anybody else can make all the people happy all the time. Sometimes we have to put our big boy pants on and do the job we're appointed to do. I don't know that there's a template out there that's going to solve all the problems that keep coming up. I mean, I wish there was a way. Don, do you, what's that term you use? Video conferencing, but you got another term.
Webinar.
I mean, if we had that available to us, the public could observe all the meetings without driving over from the east side of the mountains or driving down from Bellingham, or maybe there's an option B out there that we should maybe spend a little more time on next month.
So this is on the agenda for February. I wasn't quite sure if Jay's idea was, can we test this out in the next month or two informally, or whether or not we would get together and write up this as an option and bring it for a vote on February and fish or cut bait for how we're going to do business in 2018. I agree, it's not worth discussing at every meeting and on down the line. I think this has been very fruitful here. We've heard the angles and the concerns, and it's time to figure out a little way to go. So one way would be, I don't know if you were proposing, just do that on an informal basis in March or April and test it out and then bring it up for a vote, or we'd be doing, I don't think anything in here, our procedures disallows us the experiment of doing that, but
that was my thought, was try it on, go that direction, try it on.
But let's, since we're only 3 weeks out for the next meeting or so, I think that's a good idea, and I think it's worthwhile. We had this scheduled. We do have a schedule for a vote on in a few weeks. So I think we should also, as we think about that, Larry's idea is a good one. That's a simple one to him. Reportage out is important. We're getting better at that. But I think that's something that we can always do better. So put that there. And then on Bob's issue of the hot potato one, some things should not go to committee, period. And I think we all are smart enough to know which ones of those are not the ones. So if we have those three, better increased reportage out, Larry's idea about somebody doesn't wants to really come in, they can contact me or Larry. We can work that out. And then the hot potato one. And then look at the scheduling that you said. So if we have four items about committees that we could then take action on all four or three of the above or something in a couple weeks. But I'd like to think this through a little bit before just voting on it right now.
Yeah, no, I wasn't thinking of voting on it now. What I was bringing up was it's scheduled for a vote in February.
Yeah.
We could take it off the agenda and informally try Jay's idea, informally try Larry's idea. In March or April or May or in that time frame, and then bring it up for a vote later if you really want to formally modify your procedures. But it would mean testing this out informally, take it off the decision point for February. Okay. And
when, if we do, counsel, if we do change that, is that more complicated than just us voting on it? Because it is in our rules.
I think you could work through that. I mean, they're your rules. They're not your
not state rules.
Rules. Procedure are not APA.
Okay,
rules,
okay, so okay. That's good. And also another thing, I was thinking I could contact AFWA just to see how some other states do this if we wanted to get, again, some comparison, because there's 49 other states that deal with this in one way or another. But I don't know if that would add more complexity. And also Barbara was saying, what about the Forest Practices Board and other ones in the state, how they do it? But I think keep it simple right now also. And then this is a process of continual evaluation, I think, that we should, and continual improvement. So, yeah.
What Don said was what I was recommending. Not to vote on anything,
okay.
But let's try it on. We're imagining what could be wrong with this. We're imagining how much time it would take. I don't really know. I'm kind of expecting certain things. They may not come true. When we talked about the roadkill bill at one point, or the roadkill action, we thought, oh my gosh, people are going to take their cars and go kill animals along the highway.
Filled up your freezer.
Yeah, that never happened. And so we got to get it out of that realm and to just, let's just do it.
Okay.
Let's practice it and see how it goes. We'll know in about 2 or 3 months whether we need to, and if we're going to take a vote on it, we'll have a lot.
We have consensus?
We do.
Consensus? All right. Consensus. Thanks, Don, for putting this together. We have, in 20 minutes, I have one item that I do want to raise on communication, but is there any items under outstanding here or to be put on outstanding or standing out? No. Okay. Hearing none. Let me get into the communication issue. And this is something that I think we have to continually raise on an annual basis. At least it was done more in the past, I remember. Part of that is our relationship with staff and how we communicate with staff. There is a hierarchy in how we can best interact with staff with respect to the director and the deputy director. Let me just say it outright. It is not our position to just interact with staff on a daily basis and ask for stuff or to circumvent the organizational hierarchy of the department. It throws a lot of monkey wrenches into that process, into that whole line of communications when that happens. The way we communicate with staff has been, and I think has been effective, is the blue sheet. It keeps the lines of communication clear. It doesn't go around the director, the deputy director, or add confusion to the staff who don't always then know how to respond. If one commissioner says, I want this, another commissioner says, no, I want that, it can add a great deal of complexity and misunderstanding to our relationship with the 17 or 1900 people in the department. This was a line that was very carefully, when I joined 8 years ago, drawn and repeated on an annual basis, the rules of engagement with the commissioners and staff of the department. There is a process that we follow, may not always be the most perfect process, but I think if we interact with staff on an individual basis, it just opens the avenue of more confusion, and also with the staff, I don't think it is a good avenue for morale. We are a team. We are all bringing individual perspectives to what we do here, but when we act best when we act as a team with different perspectives. I remember almost to a person, everybody that retires from the commission always said one thing, that while we disagreed on many things, we always agreed to disagree, and we did so in a way that was open and within the commission, in a very positive, proactive way. I just do have concerns about what I've just reiterated, and I wanted to put that forward for all of us to remember when we do deal with staff, we represent the commission, not just individuals, and when we do that, we need to follow the blue sheet, which has been the way. So I wanted to throw that out for discussion. Yes.
I will speak sort of personally as a person who reported to a board, and I often would feel the need or the desire that the board would function, as you're talking about, as a team. Sometimes I felt like I had 13 bosses. It is our responsibility as a commission to function as that, the team, the commission, the group, to speak as a group and not as a single individual. And I think it is particularly important to remember that, even with our own staff person, that the direction that we're giving should be coming from all of us and not from a single individual. It is really tough. I speak from personal experience.
Yeah. Look.
You know, I think the reminders that you brought up, Brad, are appropriate. We used to do that more often. The one thing that I want to add I guess in addition to that, is that from the time I got on the commission, I don't know, 6 years ago, I guess now, to now, the workload that we have now, in my view, is significantly heavier, more complex, and takes up a lot more time. A lot more time in Olympia and a lot more time from my home office. I think we all have to shape up and become more efficient. I think we have to be more efficient at what we do and how we do it. I think we have to be more efficient with our colleagues. If I've got a problem with Jay Holzmiller and we're in session, I want to bring it up and tell him what I think. You know, mean what I say and say what I mean. But I want to do it cordially. But some of this stuff we have to drill down on and become more efficient at getting things to conclusion. We can't leave things out there fester for months at a time. We're not doing ourselves any favors. We're surely not doing our constituents favors by sleeping on the switch. And I think sometimes we do that. So I mean that in a constructive way. I think we can improve our efficiencies, and I hope you take that in good spirits.
I'll just say that we all get calls or emails from stakeholders or constituents within our area. I recently got a call from, or it was actually a text, that they had friends in Alaska that wanted to introduce the two-pole rule to the state of Alaska, and they didn't really know how to start. You know, what's the language? How did we introduce it? You know, my first thought was, I'm going to call Kelly Cunningham and ask him where the documents are. I mean, what do I know? And he referred it to another staff person that got right back to me. So I was able to satisfy that. Now, at another level, I might be guilty of what you're speaking to, Brad. In our August meeting, I brought up, I had a briefing done on spring salmon allotment and catch balancing, and also a briefing on the Upper Columbia Fish Management Plan that was introduced in 2006. I did that so the entire commission was briefed on how that's structured. And at that time, I said, I'm going to pursue that this be renewed, updated, so that we can consider potential changes in these elements. Bill Twight made the presentation, and Bill Twight was assigned as sort of to head up that project. And that's really, I've had a couple of phone conversations with him, but that's been kind of stalled, and I think, speaking to what Larry's talking about, I wanted to know what's the next step. I was told this process may take a year, and I'm fine with that, but what's the next step? What's the step after that? I asked for a timeline so I know where you're at, where we're going, whose help we need, what are the pieces of the puzzle we need to gather to make this happen and move it forward. And I talked to, by the way, I did talk to the director and tell him I was going to arrange a conference call or meeting with regional staff so that we all got on, with Bill Twight, by the way, too, so we all got on the same page, figured out, you know, what the next step should be and helped develop this timeline, and which I did. Now, that might be, and I'm not sure I'm within the guidelines of what you're speaking to now or not, but I think, as Larry says, I'm kind of used to getting things done and done in a timely way, and I think we depend on staff to do that because I can't rewrite the rules, and I need help to do that. And so there's an example of how I view that we can proceed. On the one hand, we answer maybe pretty simple questions from our constituents or stakeholders. And, you know, I've asked at one point for a sort of organizational chart, so if I had a question on prospecting, well, who do I call? You know, I'm not familiar with all the divisions and departments and whose name and number to call, and I'm not very good at using the search engine on the website to find people if I know who they are. So I understand that, and I think also there's one of these bullet points is management versus policy. You know, how do we deal appropriately with the department? One of the things, too, though, that came out in the Matrix report is our responsibility as commissioners, we need to be more engaged with the department. And how we do that, that's something we need to talk about because I think there's some agreement that we do need to increase the level of participation that we have with the department, and how we go about that answers your question.
Right, and I wasn't saying, I mean, I ask questions all the time, and I was just saying follow protocol. It's where I'm concerned is when individual commissioners, meaning well, but ask staff to do stuff in the policy realm without conferring with us first about some stuff, which can just lead to a quagmire. Going with asking the director first about stuff, that, you know, it's just, that's fine. I mean, I had one the other day from BC and wanted to know a bunch of stuff, and so I refer people all the time. It's just, I think we just have to be aware of when we are interacting with staff of this, you know, and of the protocol. So it wasn't that we shouldn't talk with them, of course, but
I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying about staff contacts and blue sheets. So staff contacts could be the staff contacts you as a commissioner, or you could contact the staff. So I was contacted by some staff members who asked to meet about some things that had to do with the fish and alternative gear and the Columbia River policy. Tomorrow morning, under the commissioner's discussion, I was going to bring up that meeting and say who was in the meeting, what it was about, as I did when I was with Ron Warren at a hatchery production meeting with some folks, and I reported on that in December. So that's an example where I was invited to the meeting, I was asked to come to the meeting, and at no point in that meeting actually did it ever come up that that I would be in a position to be representing the commission. But I'm not sure if you're talking about that or if you're talking about commissioners talking to staff, and I thought blue sheets had to do with agenda items. So I wonder maybe I could better understand exactly what you're posing here as something that we should stay away from.
Right. It's when, what I was getting at, when we as individuals on our own initiative contact staff asking for policy recommendations, policy directions in an area. So if it was on baiting or hounds, if you wanted to understand what our position is on that you, meaning then us, we put that in a blue sheet so we have a briefing.
Okay.
Rather than asking an individual staff to prepare that information for you.
Okay, so in terms of going into a region office or going to the headquarters office or asking staff to do anything of significance in the briefing, we should run that through the director.
Yeah, because it lessens the who said what. I didn't want to get too deep because it's in the big picture stuff, in the policy realm.
I want to say ditto to what you said when you first started talking, but I see it really clear. I mean, we do not direct staff to do anything.
Right. Yeah.
That's what it's about to me.
Yeah.
I have no problem interacting with staff. Yeah. All the time I'm interacting with
staff. That's what I meant to use.
And I don't mind, you know, going out with a law enforcement person and riding around with them, or somebody's got some traps for wolverines set up. I'd love to go learn about that and see what our people are doing and learn more and interact. I think it's very important to interact with them, but we don't direct them one bit. And I was told that by a staff person, I believe, that's in the audience when I first came on, and I think that's the golden rule. That gets you sideways with the whole process. And when it comes to a blue sheet, you know, we come up with an idea. Someone comes up with an idea and says, I'm going to fly that by the commission. We vote on it.
We vote on it.
And it's asking the director to direct staff to do something for us. That could be a briefing. That could be an agenda item. That could be something different than that. But that's the process. And we get sideways with that, and we're in trouble.
That's where I was going with that. You just put it together.
Yeah, and I was, just to kind of follow up on that, was going to use the example on the Upper Columbia River work that's going on. That's a big strategic direction, and I think it really is reflected in the discussion in the management audit about our roles and responsibility. We were noted to not be engaged enough in setting strategic direction, but when a commissioner comes up with something like this that's going to engage lots of staff, it really needs to be agreed upon by the full commission that this is the direction that we're now giving to the director. Upper Columbia River, it doesn't seem to be covered in our current Columbia River policy, and we need to have, you know, that big strategic direction undertaken. But that needs to be from the entire commission, because it's probably meaning, okay, well, this is a new priority. Now, you know, what priority becomes a little less? I mean, and we need to be thinking in that big way, and it can't come from a single commissioner. It needs to be all of us that are making those decisions, because they really impact the department, because we've got limited staff and lots of things to do, and we can't make all of them top priority, and it definitely can't be a single commissioner that's making it top priority.
Thank you. That was my number 10 on communication, so I think, and summed up by J1 very well. Thank you, sir. It's 3 o'clock. And I think we have gone through a number of the topics of outstanding. So we will continue to whittle that down, and if other topics come up, just send them to Tammy so we can put those on for our subsequent meetings. And right now we'll take a 10-minute break before we get into the item number two.